Beyond Us and Them, podcast on radicalization in the times of social polarization. Welcome in the podcast of Resilience Through Education for Democratic Citizenship Project. My name is Filip Pazderski, and we come back to the discussion on how social polarization and radicalization threaten our democracies. Today, we will try to have a look on these trends from the European perspective, and especially discuss the activities that have already been taken up on the European level to counter these challenges. In this respect, we are privileged to have with us Mr. Matthias Gruden, who is a director of democratic participation at the Council of Europe. His responsibilities include Council of Europe activities and programs in the area of education, including education for democratic citizenship, what will be important for us today, youth cooperation, culture, and cultural heritage. And Mr. Gruden is also a lawyer after the University of Ljubljana. Hello, it's nice to have you with us today.
Hello, thank you very much for the invitation.
Privilege is on our side, definitely. So once again, thank you. So maybe if we can start a bit on a personal note, if I can ask you about your personal ideas, why you think that the topic of education for democratic citizenship and human rights is important thing to be done.
Well, I mean, first of all, of course, this is my professional interest and responsibility. I'm a 26-year veteran in the Council of Europe, now working on the issues that we're going to discuss today. But my interest and my commitment to it goes far beyond the 9-to-5 obligations of an official responsible for these issues. I'm very much concerned and very much committed to it as a citizen, as an engaged citizen, as a convinced European, and as a father, as somebody who, of course, cares deeply and is concerned deeply about some of the trends that we are seeing in our society, changes that we are seeing. And for all those reasons, I'm, of course, with my colleagues, working very hard to contribute to reversing some of these trends and improving the situation.
Okay, so since you already started to touch upon this general situation that we are observing all around us in Europe, I also wanted to ask you what, from the perspective of the place that you are working at, so Council of Europe, what are the main challenges that are that our democracies are facing and that are threatening operation of our democracies actually?
I already mentioned, I mean, I've been here for over 25 years, and when I arrived at the Council of Europe in mid-90s of the last century, it was a completely different situation. This was a moment of the reunification of the entire continent on the basis of common values, which this organization stands for, democracy, human rights, and the rule of law. And there has never been any doubt that this common commitment, really strong agreement among all countries on the European continent will last forever. That nobody was asking the question. Now, what we have seen, of course, is that things did change, started to change, that common agreement, commitment to the values has started to fray, that divergences have appeared. And this is the situation we are facing today. We cannot no longer, I think, say that we are in the same way engaged, committed to exactly the same values of democracy, human rights, the rule of law, or that we see those values in exactly the same way. So, of course, that for the organization such as the Council of Europe is a challenge because it has changed the environment in which we operate and is having an influence on how we do things. Very shortly, what I would say is that we have seen the appearance of populist narratives and ideas in parts of Europe, accompanied by often aggressive nationalism, which has had an impact on three important points, which then also in return have an implication for our work. The first one is that we see attempts, sometimes successful, to reframe the notions of culture and identity from what we see in the Council of Europe as being culture and art, as something positive, something that helps us to grow, something that helps us to be creative, something that helps us to be innovative, something that is opening us to other people and providing opportunities for dialogue. This has been their attempts to reframe that, almost to instrumentalize it, even weaponize it, into the instruments for division and polarization. My culture against your culture, my identity against your identity. So that's one thing that is happening and is affecting our work. The other one, we see almost an assault on the confidence and trust on reason, on facts, on knowledge. And of course, that is also having a very preoccupying impact on our societies and on the functioning of our democracies. Finally, I would say also that what is being challenged by some is that really notion of a society, a model of a society that is based on solidarity and respect for human dignity and is being replaced by some more dystopian visions of a society which is much more transactional, where you can only win if somebody else loses, where there's a permanent sense often orchestrated and exploited of suspicion, of being threatened, of being in danger. And of course, fear and intolerance are of course also very damaging for the functioning of democracy. So it's all these three points that are changing the our environment, that are also creating fertile ground for all sort of other, I would say, pathologies, which is now being the main object of our trying to counter, trying to reverse, and trying to reinforce the trust and the effective deliverance on what the Council Europe stands for, and that is an open, tolerant, democratic society which is based on the democratic rule of law, respect for human rights, fundamental freedoms.
Mm-hmm. If I may ask you something else, I mean, regarding to what you just have said. So I was wondering if you have a feeling that all these three trends that you mentioned, we are or you are observing them only recently, or it's something that was that could have been observed already long before. And also the second part of this question would be, what are the reasons, in your opinion, that we are facing this all these three trends that you described to us?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure we have enough time to go very much into detail. These are very pertinent questions, very important ones, but also very complex. So any response that I can offer is going to be really, in a way, superficial and not sufficiently detailed. So I apologize in advance. As to whether this is new, nothing that we are observing today is new. Nothing is, we actually seeing nothing that we haven't yet seen, especially in Europe. This is not some sort of overly dramatic exaggeration, but I mean, the elements of what we see now is reappearance of trends, ideas, actions, ideologies that we have seen in Europe before, especially in the last century. It does not mean that they are repeating themselves in exactly the same way. It doesn't mean that we are seeing them at the same magnitude. It doesn't mean that they're going to necessarily have the same consequences. Not at all. But I think we should, we cannot afford not to see some of the similarities or with the things that have in the past brought to Europeans so much suffering and destruction. As to why it is happening, this is really a very, very difficult question. Clearly, what has happened at a certain moment between, you know, 1990s, since the fall of the Berlin Wall, and that period I was talking about, and today, is that many people have started to lose their confidence in democracy. They felt they were left out. They feel they were subject to injustice. They felt that they have been forgotten and sidelined economically, politically, in many ways. And many of those grievances, in my view, are justified. We have seen, I think, that through be it lack of knowledge, lack of competence, lack of integrity also sometimes, over the last decades, we have seen a lot of wrong things that have happened and a lot of mistakes have been made. And people are reacting to that. Some of these injustices may be only perceived, others are real, but nevertheless, they're there and they're having an impact. People, more and more people are feel disillusioned. They're more and more open to alternatives to democracy, which is based on human rights, rule of law, and fundamental freedoms because of that frustration. So any answer that we are going to propose to them has to include also, I think, clear, effective, concrete responses to the underlying reasons which have provoked those grievances that have brought, in some cases, you can say, our democracies into this critical situation in which it is now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. So since you already started to talk about that a bit about answers, and I'm sure people that will be listening to our conversation might be eager to know more about what actually are you trying to do at the Council of Europe to answer these challenges. So anyway, I am aware that this can be, again, very broad and time-consuming question, and probably all the questions that I have today are like that, but I mean, and our time is limited, but let's try to do our best. So if you can maybe brief us a bit about how, maybe even starting to explain a bit how you developed your programs that are trying to counteract these challenges at the Council of Europe, because I can imagine that it has been changing as well over the last years.
Okay, let me try to be as short as possible. Basically, in order to have a functioning democracy, at national level, local level, at the European level, you have to start with institutions. You will never have a functioning, genuine democracy without functioning democratic institutions. Here, in the broadest sense, I'm talking about, of course, legislation, democratic constitution, judiciary system, political system, parliament, everything that needs to be done. And this was the focus of the Council of Europe in the years after that reunification of the parliament, rightly so, because many of the countries which went through the changes towards the end of the last century, of course, had very little experience, had very little institutions that could support those democratic changes. So the focus was on institutions. What we are now learning, of course, is that institutions are essential, but they're not enough. That in order to have these institutions cannot operate in vacuum. In order to be operational, to deliver on the expectations and create trust, they need to operate in a democratic environment, in an environment in which citizens have the skills, opportunities, motivation, knowledge to engage in democracy, to engage with these democratic institutions, and they need to have trust in the democratic institution. Now, how you gain that trust, of course, is not something that you can expect from citizens. This is for the institutions and for the political class at the helm of those institutions to secure through competence, through integrity, through transparency, and through engagement, openness. So here is where the Council of Europe now really tries to come in, continues working on building and reinforcing democratic institutions, providing assistance to our member states when it comes to the adoption of legislation, functioning of judicial system, helping with their obligations with regard to this key elements of the functioning democracy: freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, freedom of association, functioning of political institutions. But at the same time, we are investing more and more also, I would say, in a democratic environment. And of course, the key ways for that investment in democratic environment at our end, of course, is education. Education for democratic culture, absolutely. Culture, heritage, protection of the environment, which is something that is perhaps becoming a most important preoccupation of our citizens, especially of the young generation, and working with young people. That is something that the Council of Europe has a long tradition with. We are the only international organization which actually opened up its decision-making process for the young people. We have something which is called co-management. But these are the main ways in which the Council of Europe now is trying to invest, strengthen, expand, nurture that democratic environment, which is so necessary for the democratic institutions to work and to ensure that a functioning democracy.
Could you maybe explain us a bit more how we also get to this point? I don't know, maybe if you can take us a bit behind the scenes, how these programs were developed at the Council of Europe. Was it an idea coming from I don't know, internal employees, or maybe, I don't know, with some cooperation with member states as well being involved, or other bodies that form Council of Europe?
There is no single answer to that. I think there have been many ways in which these ideas and initiatives came about. Nothing is new. We will be celebrating 70th anniversary of the European Cultural Convention, and all those activities that I described, from education, culture, heritage, even youth, is based on that convention of 1954, which has been, interestingly, the first major European Convention that followed the European Convention of Human Rights. So the founders of Europe actually were very much aware of the importance of creating an environment for the institutions such as the European Court of Human Rights to work. So they created the court convention, and then they adopted the convention that was meant to create. What happened perhaps is that for a period of time, for the reason that I described before, because it was not considered to be very important, because nobody believed that strong commitment to common values will ever weaken, we have been perhaps a little bit negligent, and we haven't been paying enough attention. What we have noticed, and this information came from different ways and has become very evident, that building and institutions is not enough. We have seen that simply because we see that there was more and more dysfunctionality, that there were more and more problems in the functioning institutions, and that these were not simply some transactional hiccups that can be ironed out and then everything together, but that there was something systemically wrong. And with, you know, when we have been looking at the reasons for the resurgence of populism, and especially the weakness of our resilience against this resurgence, we started to identify what were perhaps the areas in which we have to invest more. And in the recent years, we see that the governments themselves have understood that we need to reinforce that work, that we need to do more on things that have already existed, but are now are given additional attention. And again, we are talking about education for democratic culture, where we have developed in recent years some far-reaching, very concrete, and I think very useful instruments, such as the framework of competence for democratic culture. In the education programs that are meant to help the social inclusion, that are helping to with the integration of vulnerable groups in a society, we have been working more on the youth cooperation, different programs, also informal education for democracy. And we have developed programs and activities that are helping us not only to react and deal with the most apparent, visible part of the problem, which we have to, of course, but to also identify and address effectively the underlying reasons for many of the problems that we are seeing in our societies today.
So as I understand from what you have explained, is the situation was like that, that also an incentive to pursue with these activities also came from the Council of Europe member states as well, that recognized that there is a need for this kind of work.
It came from member states, it came from the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, it came from the civil society, it came from the youth sector, our partners, youth organizations. It came, and as you said, of course, very importantly, Council of Europe is an intergovernmental organization. It is one of its main functions is to facilitate the cooperation between governments. This is what we do. We bring together representatives of the 47 governments in different areas where they together identify problems and then look together for common solutions to this. And in that work, of course, in different areas, we have started together collectively to look for the underlying reasons and also start working on the appropriate answers to them.
Amongst all these activities that you mentioned, I would like to pick one because it is also the one that is important for us in our project. I mean the framework of competences for the democratic culture, and if you maybe can explain to those people that will be listening to us what it is aiming for, why it was developed.
Why it was developed, because clearly we saw that there was a need to reinforce education for democratic culture for active citizenship through education. It has been the analysis of our member states that in order to do that, we need to have a practical, concrete, user-friendly methodology and instruments that could be used by different actors in education, from teachers, school directors, educational authorities, and so on, that would help to bring that important activity, education for democratic culture in schools, but not simply as an advice or as a sort of some general objective, but it was really the objective was to develop something that every professional in the educational system could take, adapt and use in the classroom, in the school, in deciding on educational policy. And that was the objective. And I think this is what we really achieved. Framework of competence has been prepared not top down, as I said, from the Strasbourg and then distributed to professionals in the field, but it has been prepared with the participation of educational experts from member states, with the participation, contribution, and feedback from education professionals, from teachers, school principals, and others. So it already reflects the realities, the needs that these people are confronted every day in the classroom, if you want. And it is therefore, as I said, very practical. It is composed of four groups of competencies which are necessary for democratic culture: values, attitudes, skills, and knowledge and critical understanding. And within each of these, of course, we then develop different, more specific competencies that can be then also adjusted either for different contexts or different ages. So all in all, as I said, it is not prescriptive. So as I said, every professional teacher, school principal can take that frame of competence and use the parts that they need, adjust it to the specific needs and situation. So this is very much appreciated. I sometimes describe it as our Swiss Army knife for education for democratic culture, because it's something that you take and then you look at your needs and then you just take out the tools that you need. I know that maybe the military imagery is not the most appropriate, but we are talking about Swiss Army, so I hope I'm going to be excused. They are quite peaceful.
Yeah, that's right, and it's very nice description. I believe so, and I can only recommend for everybody that are interested to go to the Council of Europe website to learn more, because you have also very nice materials regarding this framework of competences for the democratic culture, explaining step by step also for how it can be used as well, and how it was developed. Okay, so since we already discussed a bit about some of the activities and the programs that have been adopted at the Council of Europe, I also wanted to ask you about something that maybe you have a feeling that is still missing, or maybe is already planned for the future to be implemented.
Well, I mean, there future needs and ambitions are many. When it comes to the education for democratic culture, this is in particular aiming at developing further the frame of competence for new contexts and new needs. I've said already before, there were a number of them that have already been developed, from the prevention of radicalization to different age groups, to the old school approach, which is using the frame of competence to organize every aspect of life in a school setting in a democratic way, from classroom to relations between the staff, parents, students, and so on. Our current priorities in this respect are, on one hand, directed in developing the framework for the use for vocational training, which is, of course, a very important part of education, involving many young people who are, in the current state of affairs, very often, say, have very little contact or opportunity to benefit from this kind of activities, from this education, from having the opportunity to learn, to discuss, and to challenge some of the issues that they are dealing with in everyday life. So developing that is an important thing. Also, adapting the framework for informal education, for all sorts of trainings, activities, human rights training that is being organized by youth organizations, community centers in different settings apart from the institutional educational settings. We are also working a lot on the higher education. Higher education are extremely important for two reasons. The first one is, of course, that we our ambition is, and we are making great progress also on developing our instrument for that population, for that specific purpose. And of course, that requires quite a lot of work, because you're not going to be transmitting the values and skills, or defining the skills and values in the same way if you are working with the 10 years old or with the university students. So that's the ongoing work, the higher education. But also, of course, the higher education universities are also one of the critical pillars of a functioning democratic society. This is where freedom, academic freedom, this is where expertise, knowledge, rationality, science all come together. All those points, critical thinking, all come together and are therefore also at the great under growing pressure in some parts of Europe, where the notion of academic freedom, autonomy is being challenged. So that again is one of our priorities. The third one, and it has been really also validated and or confirmed by the needs related to the ongoing COVID crisis, which was enormous stress for all aspects of the society, but had an enormous impact on the education and other areas of our work in the direct of democratic participation, is to work on the ways in which to ensure the sustainability of educational system, and to ensure that it is helping us to prevent and deal with the social exclusion. So these are the priorities which have been put to a test during COVID, which was, as I said, a huge shock and a huge traumatic experience that have brought many of the things that we have taken for granted to the breaking point, but has also showed us some of the ways where we need to go forward and reinforce them in the future.
I was also wondering how your work is related to what European Union is doing, what European Commission is planning. Especially, we know that these days, these months, they are preparing the next multi-annual framework and next activities. So I also would be interested to hear a bit how, to what extent you are cooperating with each other and how your plans kind of overlap.
I think we are very complementary. I think we see the main objectives of action in very similar terms. I think we also understand the different roles and contributions that we can make to these objectives. The Council of Europe and the European Union, of course, are two very different animals. But are two animals which can go very well along with each other, I must say, to continue the analogy. The European Union is our most important partner in all the areas of our work. We have a long-standing cooperation. Council of the European Union, I think, recognizes in the Council of Europe a very valuable and special partner, because of not only being able to develop policies and implement them, but also because of the fact, not only because of our geographical scope, which covers the entire Europe and is therefore of interest to the European Union, but also in particular because our activities in the areas, every area of work, have that very distinguished and very important specificity, and that is that they incorporate the protection of human rights and fundamental freedoms. So whether we are working on fight against terrorism, or we are working on developing democratic culture or youth cooperation or any other area, what we do is we're developing practical, concrete policy solutions and combine them with the protection of human rights. And I think this is the main attraction that the European Union is seeing the Council, and that's why they have been supporting also, of course, with resources over the years, and that's why this cooperation is also today very, very strong.
We are slowly proceeding to the end, but before we get to that, probably there are still two questions at least that I wanted to ask you about. So first would be about the effectiveness, the results of your work that you can observe, especially when it comes to work on the education for democratic citizenship. I mean, do you have any tools to observe such results, or maybe any way you can somehow observe that how it is working, what change it's creating?
I mean, absolutely. As I said, I mean, we are an international organization. We are spending public money, and with that comes responsibility. So whatever activity we engage in, we have to demonstrate convincingly that the resources are well spent, are bringing results. This is how our operations are structured. This is how our budgeting is structured. And that is being assessed then in different ways. One, of course, is the governments themselves. We have the Committee of Ministers, which is the bringing together the 47 governments, and they have the overall responsibility on the supervision of the ways in which we are spending our resources and achieving results. But then in each area, of course, we also have steering committees bringing together government specialists in every of these respective area, where they can not only working together to identify and agree on what the problems are and what the solutions would be, but also have the opportunity and responsibility to follow and assess whether the measures, actions, activities that have been decided are actually delivering on the expectations and bringing the desired results. When it comes to frame of competence for democratic culture, it also helps, as I said, that distance between policy making at European level and the end user level in schools and education institutions across member states is very short. We work very closely, continue to work very closely with education professionals in our member states. We have created a feedback loop, if you want, that provides us with information whether our work is really useful? Is it relevant? Is it helping? Is it bringing results? Is it helping to change the situation in addressing all the different specific objectives that we have set? And then, generally speaking, of course, when you look at the some of the main political objectives, we also, of course, have ways to see whether our work on efforts on reversing some of the trends, negative trends we see, are they producing results or not?
I have to use this opportunity because, I mean, this the things that are ongoing on the ground, or especially different interesting educational methods or local policies, is something that we are also interested in our project. So therefore, I wanted to use this opportunity also to use your knowledge and your broad experience to ask you whether you can point out any I don't know, interesting maybe local policy or maybe educational method or project activity that you know from any of the Council of Europe member states that are worth to be promoted and disseminated. So if you have anything like that, so please do share it with us.
Well, our joint program, cooperation program with the European Union called DISCO is, for me, an extremely valuable source of practical, concrete, local examples of how our work, our instruments, methodologies can be used in different national, local settings and how they can produce results. We have developed activities. Many of them are available also on our Council of Europe digital a platform called Lemon, which is another nice abbreviation, meaning learning models online, and I would invite everybody to go and consult them. But they deal with very different situations. We have seen evidence and examples of our work being used from the Beyond Bullying, which was developed for young learners, the Key to Media Literacy, something which is didn't mention before, but is an extremely important. Our work on digital citizenship education, helping young people to deal with the all sort of aspects of the digital revolution that our societies are going through. One that is very important for me is the one that deals with dealing with controversial issues. We had a key series, so-called short online courses that are there to help educational professionals with advice and practical recommendations on how to address controversial issues with their students in classroom. This is extremely important. We know and we have had very dramatic, even tragic evidence of how delicate, important, and potentially dangerous these be. But on the other hand, also necessary, because young people, if they don't have opportunities to speak about, inquire, challenge, critically reflect about controversial issues in the environment, education environment, they will go and look for advice, ideas elsewhere. And that, of course, can be very, very controversial. We have had the training series developed on the preventing cyberbullying, a very important and fortunately also growing phenomenon. And I could mention many others, but I guess, again, we don't have enough time. But again, I would invite everyone to go and look at our Lemon platform. If the Council of Europe offers you a Lemon, go and use it.
Yeah, we may say that, especially, I mean, both DISCO and Lemon are very nice abbreviation, especially during the summertime, but they contain very useful activities for all of us all around during the whole year, actually. But you also mentioned some very important problems that you try to answer, as I understand, especially regarding young people. So thank you for that, and thank you for being with us and sharing.
Well, thank you very much again for the invitation, for an interesting conversation, and all the best.